Hi, and welcome to a new episode of The Light Leaders. Today, I'm with Lauren Lockman. Hi, Lauren.
So I'll do. How are you?
I'm great. And I'll do a little intro for this episode, starting with me personally. I've been on a journey of becoming mainly vegan 4 years ago and mainly raw a year and a half ago, and even a lot of fruits. And now the past few years, really mainly fruitarian. And looking at it, many aspects of my health and rewiring my Western diet that I started with and the usual lifestyle Western young people might go into. And through that, I've done a series of interviews. So I've had Josh X, I've had Eli Marty, I've had Brian Mirabella, I've had Dr. Doug Graham, and I've had Professor Spira. And in these interviews, we go quite deep into nutrition with the angle of either more fruitarian or mucusless or raw 80-10-10, and they have a lot of similarities, and I'm doing personally a mix of that. I've looked into also water and different modalities, and with Lauren today we'll talk a lot about water fasting. And so I'll put chapters in the video so you can go to where you want while you watch. You can see the chapters on YouTube. I also share that because I've done quite a few interviews on those topics, it might be pretty advanced, and that's for you to know. So Lauren, The Light Leaders, the podcast for people who have already been exposed to a lot of modalities in spirituality and in health. So probably they aren't, someone on a standard American diet who starts having a disease and discovers what fasting is. It's
sure
potentially people like in Costa Rica or in Bali who have friends who have done like crazy long fasts, and they've tried it themselves and they already know about it but still have quite a few questions, and that's me too. So that's for the context of this interview. Thank you everyone for listening. You can like, share, subscribe. And thank you so much, Lauren, for joining the show today.
No, it's a pleasure.
My first question, Lauren, before we get into it, is what are you grateful for today?
Well, we only have an hour and 20 minutes, so I'm going to have to cut it short. I'm grateful for virtually everything. I live in paradise. You understand that, being in Bali. I'm grateful for the amazing people that surround me. I have an incredible team here. Both 15 or so Costa Rican employees, as well as roughly half a dozen volunteers. I'm grateful for the 30 plus clients that are here that allow us to do this amazing work and actually be able to survive doing it. I'm grateful for the ability to share this information that has changed so many lives over the last 30 plus years I've been coaching people, and so much more.
Thank you, Lauren. That's beautiful. I'd love to start with a little bit of your personal story, or maybe sure. Keep it like relatively short so we keep the discussion interactive, but so people can know where you come from, both like on a personal level and also what led you, I guess, how it led you to do what you do today.
Sure. Well, I suspect that in many ways, my story is probably not so unusual. I think a lot of people who wind up helping other people with health usually had their own issues. And certainly that's what happened for me. I was on a sort of a common trajectory. I graduated from university with a degree in finance and economics, and I went into the commercial real estate business. I did quite well. I was the youngest officer of a second largest company in Washington, D.C., and was left there to start my own firm. And life was good, except that I didn't really like what I was doing. It was just a good way to make money. And that's what I was focused on because that's the climate I was in. And what happened for me was, fortunately, at 23, I got very sick. And I got much worse with 3 years of medical care. Finally woke up to the fact that medicine is strictly about suppressing symptoms with toxic substances and surgery. And realized that if I wanted my health back, I was going to have to figured out on my own. I set out to do that. I started studying nutrition many years earlier at 14. And so I went back to that and realized that didn't help me. Conventional nutrition it occurred to me that there must be a natural diet for human beings. And so I was focused on trying to figure out what that was. And as I did my research, I came across all kinds of things and ultimately stumbled upon a book that I'm sure you're familiar with called Rational Fasting. And this is a book written by Professor Arnold Arendt around 1929, if I remember correctly. And it the book blew my mind. He was talking about going weeks without food. It seemed a little crazy, but at the same time, it made some sense to me. And because nothing else was really helping me, and I tried all kinds of things, including herbs and homeopathic remedies and chiropractic and et cetera, I decided to try fasting. I didn't really know what I was doing. And this may be mind-blowing for some of your audience, depending on their ages, but this was before we had Google and YouTube and Instagram and so forth. And so, you know, I had a book by a dead guy and no one around that could help me understand it. So it took me a while to figure out how to actually do it properly. By the time I understood fasting, I realized there were places out there you could go to get supervised in a fast. There were actually more than there are now. Many of those places have fallen by the wayside. There were a whole bunch of people who were contemporaries of Herbert Shelton, who grew up, you know, considered the modern father of fasting, really brought it back to the culture. But like Shelton, I mean, Shelton died in 1985, and a lot of these guys died off over the last 20 years or so. And there are very few people stepping up to take their places. And so, but I looked around at the time and thought, I wasn't impressed with what was out there in terms of places that one could go. Most of them were very clinical. It felt way too much like a hospital. You know, I thought, this is not the kind of place I'd want to be for a month. And so I set out to create the best fasting center possible. And this was because what fasting did for me was even hard to describe. And it just gave me back my life, brought me to a higher level of health and vitality than I'd ever experienced before. And so I thought, this is something I want to share with people. And, you know, it's interesting because I'd had a variety of different experiences, and it sort of seemed like everything sort of brought me to the same place, like I was the right guy to run this place. And I opened Tanglewood so I could help as many people as possible. In March, that will have been 27 years ago. And since then, I've taken more than 10,000 clients through fasts averaging 26 days. So, you know, I know some people, I mean, today, most people know fasting, they think of 16 hours without food. You know, our average client fast is 26 days. Every session, including this one, will have four or five people going 40 to 42 days. And a few that do 10. We have two guys leaving tomorrow who did 11 days. But almost everybody here, we got about 32 people here. Everybody else is here to do 21, 26, 30, you know, up to 40 days or even a little more.
And that's, well, thank you for that little intro. So Tanglewood,
yeah,
that's
sure.
Costa Rica. And yeah, already have quite a few questions. But and just to add, and you're also into permaculture and growing fruits and on a raw food diet, right? And is that?
Well,
is that
I'm just experimenting. I'm just experimenting with a raw vegan diet.
Okay, but your website says you've been raw vegan.
Yeah,
since
it'll be 31 years next week.
Yeah, yeah, okay. 31 years, which is good because, I mean, there is a reputation sometimes in the so. Just for the listener, we'll do a little bit on nutrition and then the main will be on water fasting. But just so 31 year raw vegan, which is interesting because for me, it's good to find kind of role models of people who have been on it for a really long period of time, because some people say, oh yeah, many people, they feel great 2-3 years and then they become deficient and they go back to eating meat or whatever.
Right, and that may be true. I think more likely what happens for most people is they begin to detoxify at a rate faster than they can handle. Mm-hmm. And so they go back to eating heavier foods that prevent that from happening. The key is to get the body truly clean and then there's no detoxification necessary.
Mm. And how fast would you, so in that process, obviously water fasting is going to accelerate a lot. First, in your in your center, do you have usually people with chronic illnesses, or do you also have people who just are fine but want to do it for optimal health?
Yeah, we have both. We have half a dozen people here right now with cancer. We have people with hypertension and diabetes and fibroids and arthritis and pretty much everything you can think of, nervous system disorders. It could really be anything. And I think it's important as a foundational piece to say something that I hope seems obvious as soon as I've said it, but I think a lot of people don't really think about it, don't realize. And that is that healing the body and cleansing and detoxification as well, these are biological processes. Only the body can cleanse or heal the body. Okay. Mm. There's nothing else that can do it. And I don't want to step on anyone's toes, but pretty much everything else we're doing, even if we don't realize it, really is more in the realm of treating or suppressing symptoms. The body's self-healing. So if you look at nature, what every species, there's roughly 25 million animal species, it's estimated, what virtually every single species will do when sick enough or badly enough injured is they'll lie down and rest as completely as possible, refusing food. You can put food right in front of them, they won't touch it because they instinctively know that processing food takes too much energy. Mm-hmm. And so, again, fasting has been largely lost to our culture, but it's always been known. I mean, those who studied nature a long time ago understood it. Hippocrates understood it, right? I'm sure you're familiar with Hippocrates' most famous quote, at least, right?
Well, let your food be your medicine. The food be the medicine.
Right. Now let your food be your medicine, your food. But I'll bet you don't know what his next words were.
I don't.
What he said was, let your food be your medicine and your medicine, your food, or vice versa. But to feed yourself when you're already sick is to feed your sickness. Mm. He fasted his patients. That was the common practice. What most people don't realize is that they taught fasting in medical schools until 112 years ago. 112 years ago is when John D. Rockefeller, the world's first billionaire, began investing in pharmaceuticals. Right. And the whole picture changed. Medicine became only about selling drugs. It used to be about helping people heal. And that's so they taught doctors how to supervise fast. They taught them what happens when fasting. And they never fully understood it. I don't know. But I'm not sure how many people had so much experience with it. But it's an amazing thing when we understand what it does. And the reason it works so universally is because if something can heal, it's going to heal more efficiently and more effectively when we get out of the body's way.
Mm. Okay, and so you talked about the rate of detoxification, and actually the podcast I just did was with Professor Spira, who's working with Arnold Ehret's mucusless diet system, and he's a lot about transition and that a lot of people, yes, they go too fast and then they go back. So I guess if someone has a really serious condition, you recommend water fasting because there's not much time. And then for someone like me who's transitioning towards fruits and feeling pretty healthy and strong and energized, would you still recommend water fasting? And I'm asking because at the moment I'm mainly on fruits and I feel pretty good, but I can feel it's already, even for my mind, a change of lifestyle, going less to the delicious rural restaurants, and there's some discipline involved. So I'm thinking probably that's good enough, but sometimes I'm thinking, I could add water fasting, but I'm afraid I'm going a little bit too fast if I do.
Well, with due respect to Professor Spira, think about smoking cigarettes. If you want to quit smoking, mm-hmm. you've got various options. Okay. You can use a gum or a patch, or you can vape, or, like something like that to slowly wean off of it, mm-hmm. or you can simply stop smoking. Now, what's the best way?
In that case, I would say to stop smoking. However, have you read a book called Man's Higher Consciousness by Ilton Otema?
Yes, of course.
Yeah. He talks about these experiments where the body has adapted And so, for example, they do experiments with a bird and they reduce the oxygen and the bird adapts. Well, if you put a new bird in that cage, it dies straight away. It talks also right. about people on opium. If they die, if they stop straight away, they might die. So there might be also a way where the body has lost its ability to not eat the kind of junk food people eat.
Right. But again, I mean, let's come back to smoking for just a second.
Yeah.
What's the best way to stop smoking? Yeah, I would say it's whatever works. Well, I would say it's whatever works for you.
Mm.
Okay. For anyone willing to simply stop, you stop putting the poison in your body. So I know people, there's a guy in Spain. I never heard of him. I don't know anything about him, except he attacked me on Facebook some years ago and said, you know, this is BS. No one heals from fasting. It takes 20 years to transition. Now, this is a guy who claims he's been transitioning for 20 years and still eating cheese and you know, and grains and bread, etc. You know, I went vegan, and 2 years later, 35 years ago, I went vegan. And a few years later, when I realized cooking was a bad idea, I gave up cooked food all at one time. That was it, period. And I realized shortly after that a lot of the things that people were eating raw, it's like, why would we eat that? It doesn't even feel good or taste good to me. Yeah. So I started eating a fruit-based diet. And that all that happened in a relatively short period of time. I've now coached more than 15,000 people, 10,000 through fasts, and many thousand more that I've just worked with one-on-one. I did 5 consultations today. Those people don't need to transition. They're perfectly fine if they change, just as someone can give up smoking. If they do that, they're probably going to have more symptoms, but they're going to get where they want to go a lot faster. And I've literally never seen anyone detoxify too quickly. Okay. Not a single time. People talk about that. It's an interesting concept, but I've never seen it happen. I think what often happens is that people detoxify faster than might be comfortable. Okay. But this isn't about keeping people comfortable, especially, I mean, I understand if you're changing your diet, you might want to still be able to function and live your life, do whatever you need to do. But when people come here to fast, they're here for 4 weeks or 5 weeks or 6 weeks. They don't need to be kept comfortable. This isn't about slowing things down. This is about getting them out of here, feeling and functioning as well as possible.
So that would be another recommendation, is if you, when you do a fast, especially a long fast like this, is kind of get through the right environment for rest, not being in doing.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, again, the whole point really is to conserve as much of your energy as you can, so your body can use that energy to cleanse and heal. So if you're still trying to live your normal life, you're not only not going to get much benefit, you're probably going to harm yourself.
I'm also interested in people who claim to be Brazilians. Do you feel those long water fasts need to have an end? Or because also reading Man's Higher Consciousness, there is a theory where we could actually function without food. What do you think of that?
Yeah. Well, again, I would say it's an interesting theory in practice. I mean, I would say maybe that's even possible, but how many human beings are ready to take that path? Many people, you've probably heard of Jas Muheen, the Australian breatharian teacher. Many people she's been teaching for like 25 years. Many people have died trying to follow her program. And she herself has been shown to eat food. And you know, she says, well, I didn't say I don't eat food. I said I don't need to. That it's been the same story with almost everyone who claims to be breatharian. I've seen very few that actually hold up to the test. So, you know, is it possible? I don't know. If I ever wake up and I'm not hungry and I never get hungry again, I'll stop eating. But right now I wake up. My body actually doesn't want food usually until in the afternoon. And my first and often only meal of the day is usually between 3 and 4 p.m. And so I'm perfectly good until then. But there's a point in time where my body says, hey, it would be a good time to refuel. And I eat. It tastes amazing. I feel great while I'm eating it, after I eat it. I have no negative repercussions from eating. Why would I stop eating?
Okay. How old are you, Bayo?
Emotionally or physically, chronologically?
Like the usual chronology,
I'll be 62 in May.
Okay. And yeah, by the way, I had a comment on you know what you said with cooked food, and then when you stop cooked food, you mainly went to fruits. I have the same also, stopping oils and spices and salt. It's like then when you eat everything purely raw, so raw, not as in a raw restaurant with salt and dehydrated papaya, no, raw like in nature, you actually end up, I was thinking yesterday, I had some raw broccoli. I was like, yeah, probably 9 out of 10 times, I'd rather have mango or maybe 19 out of 20 times, you know?
Yeah, for me, it'd be 100% of the time. I'd rather have mango. Yeah.
So yeah, pretty that's much. Interesting. When you do that, actually, it makes things simple to choose your food. So you talked about being uncomfortable for the fasting and you being hungry. So if you're hungry, why would you, you know, not eat? So I've had a bit that with fasting, especially now that I'm on fruits and digestion is easier, and I've been feeling pretty good. So I have paradoxically then more resistance to fasting because I feel, oh, my body wants fruits, I'm going to nourish it. And there's something around fasting that I know is probably going to be good for me for the detoxification and the cleansing. But at the same time, if I really listen to my body, there hasn't been a day in the past few months when I don't feel like having a piece of fruit. So how do you manage, if you're healthy at least, being like having that discipline versus listening to the body?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And I mean, honestly, it just comes down to understanding what's happening. It's almost like exercise. You know, exercise is good for you. You know, there's benefits to doing it. But if you're not being active, there's very little impetus to be active. If you're not doing anything, let's say you injure yourself and you can't move for a month. When you're done, it there's nothing really that's going to make you get off the couch except your knowledge that it would be good for you to do it. You know, your body is saying, no, stay here, die here, don't do anything. It's the same. So now there's a distinction, I suppose. Again, you know, most of the people that I work with, and I think most of the people in our culture today are dealing with chronic issues. And with a chronic issue, your body is not going to tell you to fast because you'd be fasting all the time. You have to eat, right, to survive. So if you have an acute crisis, if something all of a sudden comes up, you have a high fever, you feel really nauseous. I mean, something happens like that. In most cases, the initial instinct is to not eat. Most people lose their appetite. That's your body saying, hey, you shouldn't eat anything. Okay. And that happens with every acute crisis. The issue is that we've created the chronic issues as a result of our lifestyle choices. And so our bodies don't really know exactly how to respond to those, but a significant majority of the people I've worked with over the years, all these thousands of people, we're dealing with chronic issues. Our results are unbelievable. You know, things that most people would say aren't even possible. Like it's magic, you know, they're miracles because our bodies are incredible. So you're a young guy, you feel pretty good eating, you know, a pretty healthy diet. There might not be any reason, like any powerful reason to do this. It's different, obviously, when someone is feeling bad or has been told, you know, I've got a guy here now who was told a month ago that he had 2 months to live because he's got stage 4 cancer, right? You know, he reached out to me and said, can fasting help? And I said, you know, honestly, in a situation like yours, it's hard to say. It's a challenging thing when it's already that far along. But what have you got to lose? They've already told you they can't help you. Okay. This is
That's one thing also, because I kind of know how the universe works and I don't want it to serve me an experience that would motivate me because I'm not motivated enough while I'm healthy. So that's why I think it's good also to get into those fasts, even when I'm healthy and get that.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we have, you know, you asked me before who our people are. Well, we certainly have those people who are chronically ill. We also have a lot of people who are already on a health path. They're motivated. Maybe they're on a spiritual path and they realize something that a lot of people don't realize. And that is that, you know, if we're we're spiritual beings. I believe this. You know, we're not our bodies. We're eternal beings. We're having a physical experience. But that physical journey is a lot more fun, a lot more enjoyable when the vehicle isn't breaking down all the time.
Yeah, by the way, that's a very important point for that podcast and in that series of interview overall. It's not about cleansing and detoxifying to just be closer to God and be out of the body. Quite the contrary, it's to be very well in this body and be really strong and very energized while having that.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's it. I mean, so, you know, I'm coming up on 62. And I don't have so much time as I'd like to be physically active, but I'm still physically active. On Wednesday, I went to body surf. There weren't many waves this week, but once a week I get to the beach, I body surf, I mountain bike, I have motorcycle and quadricycles, and you know, I rock climbing. I mean, there's very few things that I don't enjoy doing, and there's nothing I can't do. And there's no reason, you know, a lot of people my age are like, no, I can't do that anymore because I've got this problem or that problem. And so, you know, life's a lot more enjoyable when you can depend on the vehicle, okay? And so, you know, for me, it's about spirituality, it's about connection with everything. I want to be able to connect with waves and the mountains and the trails, and I can do that because I'm taking care of my body. And fasting has been a huge part of that. I mean, I was, you know, at 26, I was ready to give up. I had 3 years of medicine. I was getting worse all the time. And that's when I thought, you know what? Screw this. I'm going to take it on myself. And it was interesting because 6 months later, the change was so dramatic. People started asking me to help them. Like, oh my God, you look incredible. What did you do? And that's what led me. I never thought I'd become a health coach and eventually open a fasting center. But it happened because it felt good to help people. And I wanted to see everyone enjoy the same benefits I was enjoying.
Thank you for that. Also, really resonated with what you shared about the motivation to fast, because it's true now in my everyday, I don't feel like fasting, but I also remember that when I was fasting, like after a few days, for example, on water or even, well, water less because water's more hard, but at least a few days on juice, I could remember then I felt, oh, why would I, almost in that state of consciousness, I feel, oh, why would I ever eat again? It feels so good not to. And I remember that. So at some point needs a little bit of a discipline to trigger and get into it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Water fasting for me has always been quite tough, like feeling my body really weak, and that's perfect, you know?
Well, but, you know, there's no question. It's a very difficult process for many people. And many people, it pushes buttons that, you know, they're not happy to have pushed. But the results are so amazing that honestly, you know, would you benefit from it? No question. Every single person listening, it's crazy. I mean, I see people all the time who think they're already very healthy, and they may be relative to most people, but almost everyone could take their health and vitality to a much higher level, much higher level.
What's the longest water fast you've facilitated?
So I met a young man. He was in his late 20s when I met him. He lived in London, but he came from Mauritius off the African coast. And he had been morbidly obese since he was 11 or 12 years old. When I met him, he was probably 5'5 or 5'6, but weighed almost 250 pounds. And he had stage 4 testicular cancer. And stage 4 cancer means it has metastasized to the lymphatic system and to at least one other organ. And usually for most people, by the time it's stage 4, the chances of survival aren't very good. So I met him when I was on a lecture tour. He happened to be friends of the woman who organized my events in London. And so I saw him socially on 2 or 3 occasions in addition to at a full day seminar. And about a month or two after I came back to Costa Rica from that trip, he contacted me and said, I want to fast with you. And he wanted to come here, but he had a kind of an unusual situation. He lived, times were difficult at the time economically, and he had lost a business, and he and his wife had moved in with his parents. His parents hated his wife, and he didn't want to leave her with his parents for a month or more while he was gone. So he stayed home and worked with me remotely. I've been doing remote fasting now for about 13 years. And we actually now have a very cool program where there's daily group calls, videos, an email from me every day, etc. Anyway, he worked with me remotely. The plan originally was to fast for 26 or 30 days. But when we got to that point, he said to me, listen, I'm going to keep going and I'd like you to guide me, but I'm going to keep going with or without you. I said, okay, I'll guide you. At a certain point in time, I said to him, listen, I think this is long enough. I think you should stop here. Okay. That was 18 and a half weeks later. Okay. He fasted for 4.5 months. When he was done, there was no trace of cancer. They couldn't find it.
Oh. Nice.
Yeah.
And are you only into water fasting or also into juice fasting?
Well, no. So before I really understood water-only fasting, I learned about drinking juices. And I did a lot of juice feasting. My longest one was 4 months. My last one was 120 days. And it was powerful. And then I learned about water. And I did a week on water. And I thought, holy crap, this is like 10 times more powerful than 4 months on juices. And yeah. So I never went back to juices. And since then, you know, I've really come to realize that we can never improve on nature. So I think we can agree that apples and oranges and grapefruits and papayas and mangoes and durians, etc., these are all perfect foods for the human body, right? How do we improve on perfection?
Yeah, there's something not natural about juicing. It's a process. It's
completely unnatural. I mean, we put something through a machine. It's funny because people have this idea like juices are better than eating the whole food. No, they're not. They're overly concentrated. They're largely oxidized. They're fragmented. We lose some of the nutrients that are tied up in the fiber. And so, you know, I realized I don't think of juices as being healthy things. I mean, for me, it's like a guilty pleasure. Every once in a while, I'll have a glass of juice because it tastes good. Yeah. Right? Because it's very sweet because there's no fiber. And so it's like this rush. But I don't really think it's healthy. Day-to-day basis, I have a juicer, maybe two here, don't use them. On a day-to-day basis, I have one or two mono meals per day, papaya, watermelon, mangoes, bananas, pineapples, salads, two or three times a week. That's it. When I travel, I mentioned to you before we went on the air here that when I was in Ubud just a few weeks ago, I wound up eating way too much gourmet raw food.
You go to Alchemy or Sayuri?
Well, I was staying about 600 meters from Alchemy.
Ah, yeah.
Right there in the community behind it. What's that called? Penistanan?
Yeah.
Yep. And I had a little moped and it was really easy to get there. I had two meals at Moksha. I went with friends. They took me there one night for dinner. It was delicious. And one of my friends said, they've got some amazing things on their lunch menu that aren't on the dinner. So we went back about 3 days later and had lunch there. The food there is delicious. And then I wound up at one more place. I can't remember what it's called, but they do an open mic night on Wednesdays.
And oh, Sayuri's. Right?
What is it?
Sayuri's? Sayuri's Healing.
Maybe, I don't remember. I think that's it. They didn't have a lot of raw, but I had an amazing meal there too.
Did you have the Gravlax?
I had a breakfast burrito and some drink and I think a dessert. And it was, again, it's the kind of thing where I don't eat that way very often. The food tastes amazing. The next day, I definitely don't feel quite as energetic.
I do find though that, and I'm sorry for those, but now when I go to Alchemy, I ask about, so there's a papaya salad at the salad bar. And I used to think, oh, that's great. I'm getting the papaya salad. It's still quite healthy. But even in a place like Alchemy, they add coconut sugar in the preparation and vinegar and salt. Yeah. And same at Sayuri's, they put sugar in a lot of the sauces. Right. And even now with my new test buds, I can feel, I was there, they opened a restaurant in Uluwatu too. So like my partner.
I heard it's less raw.
Yeah, and my partner really enjoys the vegan and often the raw, but it's less raw. And even it's like a lot of salt, a lot of oils. And now I'm quite sensitive to it. And even things like the breakfast burrito at Sayuri's or the papaya salad at Alchemy or the food at Moxa, which is beautiful, but a lot of ingredients, a lot of fats, and it's hard now.
I personally, my preference is, if I'm going to eat that kind of food, that's as clean as possible, but that's not how most restaurants do it.
Yeah. No, even those like raw restaurants here in Ubud, and actually made the transition a bit harder because there's more temptation.
Exactly. Yeah, it's easy here. Where I am, there are no restaurants. We have amazing fresh fruit. We're here on site, we've got more than 200 varieties of fruit growing. And it's incredible. You know, we have amazing fresh fruit every day. There's really nothing else. You know, it's not hard to do.
Mm. Okay, I have a question. Actually, I have something I really wanted to ask you, because I'll share my screen for a second.
Sure.
Because I remember I've had a few people recommending that I interview you, and I didn't know you a few months ago. So I looked on. Oh, okay. He's a lot about water fasting, and then a lot of the people I've interviewed recently, they love distilled water. I've been drinking mainly distilled water, so I looked at what you said on water, because you talk about water fasting, and I was quite surprised that you're not as much into distilled water. No. And then when you explain it, and I look at the comment, where was it? You say distilled water isn't nature's cleaner, because it doesn't exist in nature. Rain and all precipitation contains mineral and is most certainly not distilled water. I've actually replied to you here, but you probably haven't seen it.
I'm so far behind on YouTube comments.
Yeah, I'm sure. So here in Bali, I have a TDS meter, and I measured rainwater, and it comes with zero particles per million. So am I missing something? Why do you think it's not distilled?
I don't know. But there have been various studies you can find where they show that rain on average contains, I think it's three minerals on average, as well as all kinds of other things. You know, as a certified permaculture instructor, you mentioned talking about permaculture later, I can tell you the official teaching is you don't drink rainwater until it's been filtered, because rainwater can be quite toxic. And it's not just minerals, obviously, that we're worried about the pollutants. But rain picks up whatever's in the sky. As I've explained, rain doesn't precipitate out of the air. Water doesn't precipitate out of the air until it touches a solid object. So dew may be the one exception. Dew might be distilled. But dew precipitates when the air temperature drops. The water in the air will, because the cooler air won't hold as much water, precipitates out on solid objects. But it's not just falling out of the air. It has to hit a solid object first. So rain clouds are formed where there are clouds of pollen or dust or minerals, and otherwise nothing forms. So I'm not sure if it's the meter. I can't comment on your experiment. I don't know what you did.
Yeah. I've measured a lot of things, and the meter is pretty accurate. So
okay.
I would say here in Ubud, it's less than one per million. Doesn't mean zero. Maybe you can go into decimal, but it's pretty, usually distilled, they say it's good if it's like less than two or three per million. Purely distilled would be zero. And that's what it comes up with here in the north of Ubud, which is not a polluted area.
Right. But clouds of pollutants can be traveling from, you know, from some major city in some other part of the globe. You don't know, the rain is falling through who knows what. There's several issues. I mean, as I'm sure you're aware.
Spring water would come from rain anyway, so we would have that already, right?
But spring water goes through the entire hydrological cycle. And by the time it bubbles up out of the ground, it's picked up minerals in a natural way. If we add minerals to the water, it's not the same thing. Your body recognizes that.
What a lot of people say about the minerals that are contained more in the earth or the rocks is that they're not assimilated by the body. I think it has to do with having a carbon or not, like the same difference as...
That's right. They're inorganic minerals, but we're not trying to assimilate the minerals. We just need them to be there so the body can actually use the water. Drinking distilled water isn't very hydrating, and it removes electrolytes from your body. Look, think about magnetism. If I've got a positively charged and a negatively charged magnet, they're going to attract each other regardless of what they are. Like this one's not going to go, oh, I don't like that one. I'm going to look for some other negatively charged magnet. That's what I've heard distilled advocates say. Well, the negatively charged distilled water only bonds to the positively charged pollutants in your body. But that's ridiculous. It's going to bond with anything that's positively charged, including calcium, magnesium, potassium, and sodium, and one other of the body's main electrolytes. I forget which one now. Okay, so these things are being escorted out of your bloodstream.
Okay, I also feel, I don't know, I've seen a lot of people who have been on distilled water for a long time. And that doesn't prove anything, but isn't water in, like some people say, water in fruits distilled water? And is
how do you separate the water from the nutrients? The water in fruit is loaded with nutrients. So it's anything but distilled water. I mean, the truth is that the water in our food is actually completely different. It's a third phase of water. It's this gel that's much easier for your body. The fourth phase that the body is much better able to use. So I think it would be incorrect to equate it with any form of liquid water. It's really different.
Okay. So the best water you'd recommend for water fasting is?
Spring water. I mean, that's what most animals on the planet are drinking. Spring water runs into streams. This is how most animals get their water. It works perfectly well for every other species. You know, the idea that somehow the minerals in the water are going to be harmful to us, it seems kind of silly. Our systems are very similar to other animals. You know, I don't know if you're familiar with the population from Pakistan who lives up in the Himalayas. They claim to be the longest lived people on the planet. And very few people know much about these folks. But one of the reasons that some people say they live so long is because the water up there is very rich, because this is glacial water. You know, they're way up high above the normal tree line. They've planted apricot trees, but there's not much that grows up there because it's all ice and much of the year. And this, as the ice moves, it's actually scraping the rock. And so it's very rich in minerals. And some people say that's why these people live so long. Now, I think they're incorrect. I believe they live so long because they're meeting all of their body's needs. Just they happen to be meeting all their body's needs in the way that nature actually intended, better than most other people on the planet. I mean, they have no pollution. They have no Wi-Fi. They have no cell phone towers. They have no car exhaust. They do all physical work. They all get sunlight because they're doing physical work. They wind up running out of food in the wintertime because they can't grow very much there. And so most of them fast over the winter. You know, it just happens that this is how they meet their body's needs. And I think it's for this reason that they're doing so well.
Okay. Yeah, some people say also animals would prefer water that just rained and rather than stream water. That would be one explanation.
Well, I've heard that comment by people who are distilled water advocates and are trying to make a point, but I've never seen that. I mean, we see here, living on the land now for many years, I've lived in the forest or the jungle now for about 22 years, and I don't see that happening. I mean, it rains here a lot, 7 months of the year. We get a lot of rain, we get a lot of pools. Well, I don't see wild animals coming out and drinking the water. They're getting their water from the springs and the streams most of the time.
Okay, well, thank you. That's an interesting one. Like, because obviously, if you do water fasting, it's better to try and choose the best water. That's all you put in your body.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you have any recommendation with the kind of spring water? Because they're not all equal, I guess.
Well, I mean, the issue with spring water, as you say, they're not all equal. The fact that something's coming up out of the ground doesn't necessarily make it fit for consumption. So I think the emphasis on total dissolved solids is a mistake. Again, you know, we want there to be naturally occurring minerals in the water. That's what every other species is consuming. You know, we want to make sure there's not a bunch of garbage in there. Unfortunately, humans have polluted much of the groundwater. So the water tables are often polluted. And that means that water may be coming up, but maybe you don't want to drink it. You'd probably want to have a spring tested. One of the reasons we're located where we are is there was a spring on site. And so we had the water tested. The water was virtually perfect. And we still have it tested every few months because conditions can change in nature. And so we want to make sure it's safe to be drinking ourselves. You see me sipping it, as well as to be giving it to our clients. It always has been.
By the way, one thing that about the inorganic minerals that I potentially wouldn't want in my body and, and led me also to stop salt. Do you eat salt?
No, but that's different. The thing is, again, the inorganic minerals that show up in water, I mean, you can't see them. If you put salt in here, it'll change the way the water looks, unless it's incredibly diluted. If we add water, if we add salt or any other mineral to the water, it's different. Your body recognizes that. But because the minerals in this water came in as part of the natural hydrological cycle, the body doesn't flag those as being something unnatural to us, and it doesn't affect us. Salt, as you know, is toxic to us. I don't eat it. I haven't eaten salt. I gave it up way back in my 20s, and that was a long time ago. I probably got some at some of the restaurants in Ubud, but there probably hasn't been any since then. You know, my body had a chance to clean some of that garbage out. But as you probably know, salt raises blood pressure. When the body, I'll tell you just a funny quick story. About twice a year, I'll get an email from a client, usually someone who completed a process with me, either here or remotely. You know, maybe it's been 2, 3, 4, 6 weeks since they finished their process. And they'll send me a message that says, I woke up this morning and I had edema everywhere. You know, I was all swollen. What's going on? And I'll respond by writing back and saying, what did you eat with salt in it? And they'll usually say something like, how did you know? Although I had a woman once, we were talking about Australia, I had a woman once from Australia who wrote back and said, I didn't eat anything with salt in it. I said, okay. So she scheduled a consultation with me. We get on this call and I said, so what did you eat? And she said, miso soup and sauerkraut. Now you're probably aware that both miso soup and sauerkraut are loaded with salt. You know, having gotten her body clean, I mean, some people eat salt every day and there's no response to it. But if you get your body clean enough with a 21 to 30 day water fast, which is what most of my clients are doing, you're going to notice it big time. Your body's going to react.
That's also the curse of being more pure on detox, is you become so sensitive.
Well, you know, as long as you keep making excellent, I mean, I think it's actually a blessing because it keeps you honest. It reminds you every time I make a poor choice, my body says, you're an idiot. You shouldn't have done that. Now you're going to suffer for 24 hours or whatever it is. I mean, fortunately, my body recovers very quickly. But I mean, I like the fact that my body says, no, don't do that.
When Bali and people have open minds here.
Yeah.
Some people who do fasting on urine, looping their urine. Have you heard about that? And what do you think about it?
Yes, of course. Well, you know, again, I mean, I believe completely that the body is self-healing, and I believe the key is to listen to the body. So first time I heard about this, it sounded strange, but I got to where I am, which is, you know, what most people consider pretty crazy, doing things most people would never consider doing, because I was open-minded. And I haven't closed my mind. Some people say, you know, I don't have an open mind. I say, well, it's not so open, my brain's going to fall out. If you understand physiology, and I've studied physiology extensively, I will in the next month or so be teaching MDs about some of the physiology involved with water fasting. I have an MD who's a client who teaches a course to other MDs, and he's asked me to teach this aspect of it. So it's been clear how the kidneys work for well over 100 years. And our kidneys' primary job, there's two jobs that the kidneys are responsible for. And they are removing all the toxic substances from the bloodstream, because all the garbage winds up in the bloodstream. wherever toxins are, you're familiar with the lymphatic system. What most people don't know is that once the lymphatic system picks up all the garbage from the cells, they go through the lymph nodes, which are mostly around the head. And we have a big one here, here. We have half a dozen of them behind our head. And all these lymph nodes, they're like filters. Once the body's done what it's going to do, whatever's left is dumped into the thoracic duct, which is a major vein leading back to the heart. It's dumped into the bloodstream. Why? Because from there, it gets pumped directly to the kidneys. This is how we get rid of most of the toxins in the body. Certainly, there are some solid wastes that are eliminated through the colon, but most of the toxic stuff is eliminated through the kidneys. Okay, and urine contains up to 300 different chemicals, including household cleaning products and personal care products and pharmaceuticals and environmental pollutants and so forth. So that's the primary job, is getting those poisons out of the bloodstream. The second job is maintaining the perfect balance in the bloodstream. So I'll give you a simple example. Potassium and sodium are two of our most important electrolytes. When I say important, it's because, you know, if your calcium or magnesium is out of balance, these are other electrolytes in the bloodstream. And I think calcium is the one I forgot to mention earlier, is also positively charged. These electrolytes, if they're out of balance, there'll be some issues, but you're not going to endanger your life. Okay. But if your sodium and potassium aren't where they should be, if those levels aren't where they should be, your heart might stop, or you could have a seizure and die. And so they're kind of important. And they're not equal, but they have to be maintained in a specific proportion to each other. Now, the diet that I eat, we talked about salt. The diet that I eat contains very little sodium, no sodium chloride most of the time. And, you know, and I mean, you know, sometimes it's 6 or 8 months I'm eating nothing that's got any salt in it.
Well, you can get sodium from celery, for example, right? That would be a helpful.
Absolutely. But I don't eat celery very often, if at all. And the things, I mean, you can also get celery from lettuce and other greens and from tomatoes, but it's in very small quantities. But on the other hand, every day, almost every day of my life for 20 plus years now, I eat watermelon, papaya, bananas, or avocados. And sometimes all of those things in one day. Probably not very often. Usually it's one or two of those per day. All of those fruits are high in potassium and all have almost no sodium. So I'm consuming a lot more potassium than sodium. My body is constantly having to balance the sodium and potassium. And what that means is I'm excreting potassium in my urine all the time, so I can maintain the proper ratio with the sodium, which is there in relatively small quantity. That's critically important. If I can't maintain that balance, I'm in trouble. Okay. So those are the two things the kidney is doing. Now, these are all things, even the things that are good for us, like potassium, my body's chosen to get rid of that potassium. Putting this stuff back into my mouth when my body clearly wanted to get rid of it makes no sense whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all good. And do you have any kind of more complex detox thing? I don't know, GI broom pudding, turpentine, whatever. It's just water.
I truly believe that our bodies are amazing, virtually infinitely intelligent.
Enemas probably still, right?
Say again.
Do you use enemas?
No.
No.
No, no need. There's no need for them. Mm. In fact, they've been shown to flush out beneficial bacteria. You know, in your colon lives your gut biome, the second brain, 10 trillion bacteria, same 3 pounds as your brain. And they're producing all the B vitamins. And the last thing we want to do is flush them out with water. Okay. Change the pH of the colon. So no, we don't do anything. The whole point is to intelligently get out of the body's way. Our bodies know exactly what they need to do. We don't need to do anything except stop creating problems. That's all we have to do. So we're resting, we're sipping water. You know, the key is to know how much water. The key is to know what to do and what not to do. The key is to understand what's going on. I'm interpreting numbers for people and explaining why they have edema or what's going on and what their numbers mean and why they feel the way they do, so that they can relax. And I mean, you know, people say, well, I can, you know, not eat all by myself. Yes, you can. Not many people get the same results, but it's true. I mean, it's a natural process. Anyone can do it. You don't need to come to me if you don't want to. I can pretty much guarantee you'll get much better results with experienced guidance, but we don't need to do anything else. So we have massage therapists here, and, you know, people that are doing nothing for 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks enjoy getting a massage. Sometimes it feels good. I mean, maybe they're not being touched the way they normally would if they were home with a partner. And so it's nice to have some touch. It sometimes can help when people have a lot of stuff stuck in their colon. My massage therapists know how to help move some of that, and that's useful. But we don't, you know, massages are not necessary. I'm a Reiki master. Reiki is not necessary. Mm-hmm. It's helpful to people, perhaps, and they may make them feel better. But all people need to do really to cleanse and heal is rest as completely as possible and sip enough water.
Do you include dry fasting at all in your modalities?
Yes, every night from the time they go to sleep until the time they wake up.
Okay, but that's it.
Honestly, you know, again, I mean, I believe that humans, understandably, are always looking for a better way, always hoping to find some magic bullet, some magic way to do things that's going to make it easier or faster. And you've heard, oh, well, dry fasting's 3 times more powerful. You go into ketosis the first day instead of the third day. The reason that happens, and it doesn't happen for everyone, it happens for the average person because the average person is seriously dehydrated. We've been measuring hydration levels for more than 17 years. We've measured more than 6,000 people here over the last 17 years. Virtually everyone is seriously dehydrated, okay? And when you're in ketosis, when your body is in fat metabolism, which doesn't normally start until about the third day for most people, when it's doing that, perfect water is a byproduct of fat metabolism. So the average person goes into ketosis right away if they're not drinking water because their body is desperately seeking water. But being in ketosis doesn't mean they're cleansing or healing. It just means their body is running on ketones. If your body is desperately trying to get enough water to stay alive, it's not doing a lot of cleansing and healing. Mm. And one of the things we see here, we see this all the time. We see people, you know, in this group, I've got 1 or 2 people who have a significant amount of dry fasting history. And what they found eventually, most of them was they still didn't get the results they wanted. So they come to me. And the first thing that happens is we start to get them hydrated and all the things they thought they'd healed, they didn't heal. All the symptoms come back. The symptoms were suppressed because nothing happens without having enough water. I'll give you an example, just one. We had a guy here back in over the summer, his first fast with me. He was 30, I think he was 36 or 30, 35 years old, somewhere in that range. And normally what happens, you know, if you think about the average person who's eating a conventional diet, whether that's from France or it's from the US or it's from anywhere, the average diet is dehydrating to the body, right? Because it contains all kinds of things which have been cooked and processed. Okay. And stool is 75% water. If you're eating foods that are 20% water, how does the body get rid of them? How does it move them through the system if stool is 75%? Well, it has to give up water to move these things through. What we're meant to do is to eat watermelons and papayas and pineapples and mangoes and foods that are contributing perfect water to the body. And we're actually in the transverse colon, one of the last sections of the intestine. We're absorbing all this perfect water into the body. But the average person has to be putting water in, not taking water out of the intestine. They have to actually lose water every time they eat. And so most people get more dehydrated every day, every week, every month, every year of their lives. Usually the most dehydrated people here are the oldest people here. But this guy in his mid-30s, was as dehydrated as the average 70-year-old. Why? And this is true almost every time we have someone who's been dry fasting. Not just before this. I mean, in the past, he had a history of, you know, trying dry fasting, you know, 5, 10, 20 times, whatever. His body was seriously dehydrated. I've tried it myself 3 times for 4 days, never saw any significant benefits, and my mouth got very dry. And I thought, you know, this doesn't make any sense to me. Nothing happens. Water is life. Why do we want to make the body more dehydrated? So what we've seen is people get seriously dehydrated. When we get them hydrated again, all their symptoms reappear. All they were doing was suppressing them. You know, I really don't believe. Now, let me address one piece of this, because people say, yeah, but animals in nature don't drink water. Well, that's true. But animals in nature didn't grow up eating dry cereal and toast. Animals in nature have always eaten a high water content diet. They're not dehydrated because they didn't grow up with some, you know, crazy manufactured cultural diet. So an animal in nature doesn't need to consume anything, because as the body is breaking down fat, they're making the water they need. But if your body is dehydrated and you have between, let's say, 10 and 20 pounds is typical, according to one study, 10 to 20 pounds of old hard material in your body.
Mucoid plaques, right?
Exactly. It's like a giant sponge. And every time you eat or drink, it's absorbing water, and you never get hydrated until you get rid of that stuff. Which we do with 21 days fasting or longer. No enemas, no colonics. All we need to do is fast long enough and properly. And at the end, we're going to be excreting all kinds of stuff.
So when you say properly, what do you mean?
Well, I mean, resting as completely as possible, not doing anything that's actually harmful to the process, that's taking energy from the process, getting enough water. We have to be careful, because if you don't drink enough water, you'll get dehydrated and you'll throw off your electrolytes. If you drink too much water, you'll get dehydrated and you'll throw off your electrolytes. So we have to understand exactly what to do. I've sort of worked out, I mean, people at Tanglewood drink on average between 2 and 3 times as much water per day as people drink at my largest competitor, True North in California. People from True North never eliminate old hard material. I mean, I have an old acquaintance friend who worked there for 8 years as an MD supervising fasts. He doesn't believe mucoid plaque exists. We see it with every single client, except the ones who every single day I'm saying to them, you got to drink more water. The people who aren't drinking enough water don't eliminate this stuff.
What quantities?
Well, it varies from person to person, but for most people, it's going to be between 4 and 6 liters during the process every day. And the only way we can know what someone needs is to properly interpret all their daily vital signs. So here we look at blood pressure, pulse, temperature, blood sugar, oxygen saturation in the bloodstream, body fat, muscle mass, and water in the body. And then from there, we calculate various things like their lean hydration numbers. And so it's interesting, because we can actually see when someone drinks water, we can't see looking at the body, we can see from their numbers where the water is going. Oh, look, this tells us you're rehydrating old waste in the intestine. And this number means you're holding extracellular water. You have some edema or some mucus that wasn't there yesterday. This number means you're actually rehydrating your body while you're fasting.
And while you're on eating your fruits during the day, do you still drink water, or do you rely on fruits to hydrate you fully?
Well, it's interesting, because so if we were to take all of our clients and divide them into different groups, and we have people who have a history of dry fasting, we have people who've been eating a raw vegan diet, we have people who eat conventionally. The most dehydrated people we see invariably by far are people who've been dry fasting. The next most dehydrated people we see are fruitarians. I'm a fruitarian, but they're fruitarians who don't drink water, which is what a lot of them do now. Okay. What happens? Well, again,
eat your water. Kind of.
Yeah, and the water is perfect. The problem is they still have this giant sponge in their bodies. You've got 5 to 10 pounds of old hard waste in there, and it's absorbing water. Until you get rid of it, even then, it makes no sense not to drink water. Even then, I live on fruit, and I spend hours a day talking. Okay, I do 4 or 5 hours of consultations on Zoom every day. I give a lecture every day, and I talk to 30 clients here in person every day. And so I'm talking for hours a day. And because of that, I'm slowly sipping water throughout the day. Okay. Not much, much less than most people, but it definitely helps when you're talking a lot to have something coming in.
Okay.
Yeah. But no, I mean, I think, again, I think it's a mistake. And when we see this all the time, people coming in thinking they're hydrated because they eat well, we see their numbers and they're always shocked. And it's amazing what happens when we can actually get them hydrated. Everything changes. I truly believe that hydration is the single most important thing we could measure.
So to measure how hydrated I am, so you have a machine over there?
We do. We use a sophisticated... Say again?
Is that something I could find in Bali, if I'm curious?
Yeah, you can probably find one. I'm sure there are probably people who offer services where they can do all kinds of diagnostics to see how you're doing. You can order a scale. I mean, there are bioimpedance scales that will tell you how much muscle mass and body fat and water you have. These devices were designed by an American inventor for the US military, the US government, when they were in the first Gulf War. That was what, like 30 years ago. They had personnel in desert conditions. They wanted to be sure they didn't get dangerously dehydrated. And so this was the first portable technology that allowed them to measure someone's hydration level. Now, there are various things you can do to get a sense of it. You can pinch the skin on your hand here and see how quickly it bounces back. Right here above the knuckles, you pinch it, it should immediately snap back. Okay, you'll see people that are dehydrated that you pinch it and it slowly goes back. Okay, but that's not a measurement. We're actually measuring it, and the technology is not perfect, but it's pretty good. Now, you can get one of these machines for $30 or $40. We use a device that was about $500. It's a lot more sophisticated, and it's pretty good. Then, as I mentioned before, I figured out how to interpret their vital signs about 20 years ago, and I now teach this to doctors. And this allows us to see what their blood volume is. Okay, I mean, without trying to measure all their blood, how do we know if someone has enough blood? And your blood volume is changing all the time, because every day, even if you're not bleeding, your body is retiring 2 million blood cells. Not every day, every minute. 2 million blood cells are taken out of circulation because they're worn out, they're tired, they're damaged. In order to replace them, the body can recycle a lot of materials, but blood is mostly water. So in order to replace them, you need to have enough water available in the body. And when we're fasting and the body is trying to use water to rehydrate old waste, to keep the body hydrated, to make enough urine to filter all the garbage out that's coming in through the lymphatic system and it's already in the bloodstream, all these things the body's trying to do, we need to take more water in. So we have a couple different tools we can use to see what's going on for somebody.
Okay, that's awesome. And maybe if you have a link or some more information, I might put a link for buying those like little scales. It's 15 to, you have 15 minutes more, let's say 10.
Right.
And I'd like, to start being conscious of your time and wrapping it up. There's one important thing I feel closing more that fasting topic. Is breaking the fast. How do you break the fast properly? Because that's very important. Yeah.
Yes, it's critically important. Most people aren't going to be in such dire situations, but if you don't do this correctly, you can put yourself in serious distress. Now, the example, I hate to bring it up, but it's a powerful example. At the end of World War II, when the Allies went in and liberated the Nazi concentration camps, there were people there who'd been living on a bowl of watery soup and one piece of bread every day. They were slowly starving to death. And after they were liberated, the Allies threw banquets for these prisoners, and many people died. They hadn't been fasting, but pretty close. They were eating almost nothing. And all of a sudden, they took in way too much food, way more than their body. It was a shock to their system. And this is called refeeding syndrome. And many people fasting on their own make the mistake of eating way too much or eating the wrong things and really, really feeling terrible. So what happens to most people is, most of our clients, when I started off, people were allowed to come and then they could decide, they could pay as they went, they could decide how long they could fast until they felt like they were done. That was fine. What happened was, within a few years, we were having such amazing results. We tried advertising twice. We never saw any results from that. But we've stayed full now for nearly 27 years because the results are so amazing. Mm-hmm. And so what happened was our set, we used to be open all the time. Now our sessions are usually 10 weeks long. And I need to know when someone's leaving, because we're going to have someone else coming in the same day to fill that space. We have people waiting to get here. We, you know, right now we're completely full. We have people that want to be here. We can't, we don't have space for them. And so we need to know when someone's going to be done. And so it's not as natural. It's not like you can just go until your body's numb. But the truth is, that would take most people 6 to 8 weeks anyway. And that's just the fasting part. Then we have the refeeding piece. So most of our clients are here for 4, 5, or 6 weeks. When it's time to break their fast, because they have to get on a plane and go back to their family or their job or whatever their life is, they're probably not hungry. Their body wants to keep fasting, because fasting is allowing the body to cleanse and heal, which is what it wants to do. Mm. And so we have to very gently, slowly bring them back from nothing to normal amounts of food. So by the time they leave, they got plenty of energy and are ready to go do whatever their life requires of them. We do that by slowly introducing food. So the first day they have five, if it's a 21 day fast or longer, they start with 5 tiny meals of 2 ounces, high water content fruits like watermelon or papaya, or fresh out of the coconut water, nothing in a bottle, nothing packaged. That's not the same. It's oxidized and often rancid. So the second day, every day the quantity goes up. The meals get a little further apart. We go from 5 meals to 4. And by the end of the week, people are eating normal quantities, but it goes up stepwise a little bit each day, a little bit at a time. This works really, really well. At first, it's funny because people will say, I remember a couple of years ago, we had a young woman. It was her second day of refeeding. Her second meal was at 11:30. I have a lecture every day from 11 to 12. And there's one day where the meal's at 11:30. So she was gone for a few minutes. She comes back and I said, how was it? I was in a break. And what I was saying, he had some watermelon. Watermelon's not very calorically dense. And I said, how was it? She said, it was amazing, but it was way too much. Now this is a woman, normal, full grown woman, maybe 5.5 feet tall, let's say 160 some centimeters. And I said to her, that portion was 34 calories, 34. Mm. I mean, the average person eats a meal, of 1,000 calories or so. Mm. This is 3% of what the average person's eating. How could it be too much? Okay. It wasn't too much. It might feel like it because she had a bunch of old hard material. She was hydrating when she ate it. So we have to start slow, and we go slowly up. And usually by the time people are done with their process, they feel amazing. They have tons of energy. And usually they've eliminated a whole bunch of old hard material.
Okay. Thanks.
Sure.
I'd love to ask you very quickly, because I love that you grow your fruits. And what's the importance for you of growing your own fruits versus... here in Bali, for example, I guess some are more organic, like papayas and bananas, but I would still really like to start growing my fruits. So
of course. And I want to add, I like to be completely transparent. When I got here, this place was so ugly that the first two times it was shown to me, I said, no, there's no way I could ever live there. It's way too ugly. Right. I really want to be in an aesthetically pleasing environment. We've created something that's spectacularly beautiful, but it took a lot of work. And so originally I was focused on the buildings. When I got here, we had space for 5 guests. Now we actually have space to house 42 people. Mm. We'll only take a maximum of 34 when fasting. We have 8 tiny buildings. We'll only put 1 person for fasting. We'll put more people in, like for our fruit festival in February. We can put 2 people in, but for fasting, it's only 1. So we were focused on all of that infrastructure sort of thing. We really started planting fruit trees in earnest just about 5, 6 years ago. We've been here on this site now for 9.5 years. And so we're only now starting to see real harvest. We harvested our second Champadak last week. We've harvested probably 20 jackfruits. We now have hundreds of jackfruits on trees. We have a lot of trees, more than 100 of them in the ground with hundreds of fruits. But right now they're all pretty small. We harvest a lot of mangoes in season, avocados in season. We have tons of oranges because we had developed orange trees here. We have a lot of bananas. They grow fast, papayas. passion fruits, granadas, lots of things. But there's a lot of things we still can't provide for our needs. And so we have four or five suppliers now, and they're all 100% organic, except for one local supplier that provides us with coconuts, which nobody sprays. So they're not organic, but they're organic anyway.
Yeah. And
but the importance is, you know, I mean, first of all, we want to make sure that the food really is high quality.
Yeah.
I'll give you a quick example. We grow a lot of bananas, and I'm not a huge fan of Cavendish bananas, but the Cuban red bananas, the manzanas, the apple bananas, you know, some of the bananas are amazing. So usually we have apple bananas all the time. We have lots of them planted here. But when we don't have them, we'll buy some from the local farmers market. And most of my team doesn't want to eat the ones we buy. They want to wait till we have ours because ours are so much better.
Okay.
And it's, you know, the difference is that we're using permaculture techniques. We're using banana circles. There's plenty of organic material there to feed the banana plants. We just get these amazing tastes. So by controlling how we're growing, we can ensure the highest quality food. We can ensure the freshest food. We want to eat things that are no more than, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 days off the plant. In France, in the US, in Europe, you're eating foods that's weeks since it was picked most of the time. Right.
Yeah. And I guess people are out of their fast, all the more important than they have the best fruits.
Exactly. I agree with you. Really important.
Okay. Well, thanks so much, Lauren. I think we've covered quite a bit. I mean, there's so much more, you know. I was watching a video on you not using toothpaste, for example, and having a lot of people question fruits and teeth, and we could go to quite a few things, but I know your time is limited now.
Well, unfortunately, I need to go lead a meditation in just a few minutes. I had a feeling. We talked about this. I said to you, we're not even going to cover this one little area in this much time. If you'd like to, we can always do it again sometime.
Of course.
I love doing these kinds of things.
Of course.
So it's great to connect.
But that was very insightful. That was very insightful. And even for, you know, I like to ask questions, like, it's for me, because that's also my journey and through that.
Yeah,
for
of course.
And it was interesting regarding distilled water. It was interesting for me to motivate me to do another water fast soon. And yeah, I would love to know, do you intend to have a center in Bali?
There's a very good possibility.
Okay.
I'm actually, I was just there a few weeks ago. I think I might be back in a couple of months. I want to come back in the hot, because when I was there, we found durian, but we had to hunt for it. Sometimes it wasn't always great. In January, I understand it's going to be everywhere. And it is one of my favorite things. I'm going to have a couple of weeks free before my girlfriend is free. She'll be here. She'll join me here on the 1st of February, but I'm going to have a couple of weeks free. So I'm thinking maybe I'll shoot back to Bali. Maybe we'll meet in person. You know, if you like, maybe we could do one of these in person someday.
That'd be cool. I know I've met with Jeff also. I've seen him on your channel, Jeff Juicy. We'll probably have him on the show soon.
Yeah, well, Jeff and I are talking about doing an event together in Bali next January, 2024. And I am actually, I mean, my plan is to create additional locations in 3 or 4 more places around the world so that it's easier for people in Asia, instead of having to fly halfway around the world, we'll have something local. We'll have something in Southeastern Europe, you know, maybe in Greece somewhere. We'll have something maybe in South America someday.
Yeah, it's just not nice to travel at the moment. Like, I just don't like
it. No, it's become a lot less fun. I mean, it's, you know, I'm guessing I don't know how old you are. I'm guessing you're too young to remember this, but I can remember when traveling was easy. You just walked on the airplane. Like, it was almost no big deal.
Yeah.
Right. Now there's all the, I mean, I understand the security, but it's become a bit of a hassle.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's also things around like papers and jobs and like that.
Of course. Yeah. I get it.
But anyway, I'd love to go to Costa Rica at some point, you know, and I was thinking, oh, maybe I go for the fruit festival and Envision. But we'll see.
Yeah.
But I would love to see you in Bali. Let me know when you come. And thank you so much for your time today. Do you have a last
pleasure
for?
Well, you know, yes, thank you. Yes, I appreciate that. You know, the thing I like to leave people with, I mean, again, I've seen so many miracles that people would be blown away. So I want to let everyone know. And it's, you know, it's interesting because I started out, my goal after taking myself from a very poor level of health to an amazing level of health and vitality, 35 years without a day sick, without missing a single day of work, you know, with feeling amazing every day, still being able to do whatever I want. I'm focused. I mean, yes, fasting is the primary tool we use here, but for me, it's really about human potential. It's how do we maximize our own amazing, I believe every single person listening to this, watching this right now, has incredible gifts and is capable of manifesting miracles. Unfortunately, most people never come close to manifesting what they're capable of because they allow fear to stop them, or because they're so sick, they're, you know, they're just not healthy enough to actually put the energy into doing what they need to do. And so I want everyone to understand that you can create almost anything you choose to. And if what you choose is to feel and function better than ever, it's a great place to start, because with that, there's no stopping you. If you're interested in that, I'd be very happy to help you achieve your goals.
Thank you so much, Lauren. And also
my pleasure.
In the description, your website and the things you do. And thank you so much for your time. And thank you to everyone who listened to the interview.
It's been a pleasure being with you. Bye-bye.